And then in front of me was an old-fashioned white screen that I was watching my life review on. And then in back of me was a 35 millimeter camera that was rolling. I could hear was rolling and see that it was putting my life review on the screen.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here. We're joined by Lynn. And Lynn is a referral, if you remember from Bridget's episode, one of our favorite episodes. All of our episodes are our favorite episodes.
I know, they just keep getting better and better and better.
So yeah, we are thrilled and excited. We don't know a ton about Lynn's story. I spoke with Lynn on the phone a little bit. We kind of went back and forth, and I knew that we needed to have her on, and she was willing to come and share her story, her experience. So we will pretty much be hearing it for the first time with all of you. So we are excited and thrilled to have Lynn. Lynn, we're so thankful that you're here with us. Thank you for taking the time to come with us and to teach us. So I'll turn it over to you. Go ahead and introduce yourself really quick. And also, if you could, I should have warned you about this before. Just everybody likes to hear something a little interesting or quirky about you. So if you have a little nugget that you can share with everybody that's maybe out of the norm, or what everybody thinks is out of the norm, you know, what's normal anyway, right? So yeah, Lynn, we'll turn it over to you and we'll let you get going.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to meet both of you. Quirky, nice. quirky. I mean, I have a lot. Probably, I think what a lot of people find a little outside the norm is when they hear that at my age, I still surf.
So I would not have.
That is amazing.
I think I'd be afraid to surf at my age. So
yeah.
Not that I, you know, I'm a regular surfer. I try to at least do it at least once or twice a year now. But I do try to do that, and that will be part of my story that I actually share with you today. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Go ahead and jump right in.
So I am going to share a near-death experience with you that I had when I was 22 years old, and that's been about 48 years ago. But before I start, I wanted to share a little bit about my childhood, because I think that's important. I grew up in a very dysfunctional, abusive household. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was an incest survivor. And they had their own wounds, very few tools on trying to raise eight children. And I was the oldest of the eight children. And the gift that my father actually gave me was that he made sure that we all grew up Catholic. And my mother actually converted to Catholic when they got married. I think I was baptized when I was 3 years old. And I went to catechism at every Friday night until I was in high school, until I was a senior in high school. I really looked forward to it when I was growing up. It was kind of my escape from the house. And it did develop a relationship for me with Jesus. And so my relationship that I had with Jesus was always the teacher Jesus, not the Christ that had died and for us on the cross, but I always felt like I could have these conversations with Jesus, the teacher. So when I was 22 years old, and I had, and I was kind of heading down the wrong path, with, you know, kind of hanging out with some rough people, crime, drugs. And I had a boyfriend that I then was a surfer and loved to surf and got me into surfing. And then I kind of was starting to look at life a little differently. And we went on a trip to Puerto Rico to go surfing. And I actually was kind of a newbie at surfing, and I had misjudged the waves. And I thought they were like 4 feet, maybe 6 feet. And they were only coming in like 4 to 6 waves a set. And they actually, I had gotten caught in the middle of a set, and the waves happened to be 8 to 12 feet, and they were coming in 6 to 8 waves per set. So they were really, you know, coming in and not much of a lull in between. So I had gotten caught in between, and I was basically drowning, and I was being smashed up against a rock of sea urchins and coral. And I kept thinking, gosh, if I could just get to that rock and climb up to it, you know, then I won't, you know, I'll be saved, type of thing. And as I was kind of climbing up the rock, and I was getting all these sea urchins in me, and I was getting all scratched up, and, you know, it was very painful. Every time a wave would come, and then it would wash me down the side of the rock down into the ocean. And then I would pop my head back up, and then I would start climbing up the rock again. And I found myself on the rock praying to God, saying, please don't take me. I'm not worthy to go yet. I haven't done everything I should do in your name. And the next thing I knew, I was pulled up out of my body through my head. And I remember experiencing kind of a split where there was like a face, which was, I kind of identify as my soul. And then it seemed like there was a spirit that went directly to where the white light was. And then I could see, I could experience a lot of stuff that was happening. And I could also witness my body that was drowning and being smashed up against the rock, as well as somebody yelling, there's a woman out there drowning, let's go save her. Which those people end up being my angels that saved me. And I never ever found out who they were, actually. So as I was going through my near-death experience, I eventually, my split from my face, the soul part of me, connected right away to the spirit. And it was kind of like I was slammed, you know, on an old wooden bench, and I was hovering above it. And then to the right of the bench of where I was sitting was this white light, very, very bright white light. Very, I felt like if I touched it, that I would like be electrocuted or shocked or something. And then in front of me was an old-fashioned white screen that I was watching my life review on. And then in back of me was a 35 millimeter camera that was rolling. I could hear, was rolling and see that it was putting my life review on the screen. And then there was a tunnel to the right of the screen in front of the light, the white light that was next to me. And on each side of that tunnel was Jesus, the teacher that I knew as a child growing up. And then there was my father, who I never thought loved me, who never hugged me, who never showed any emotion towards me or even said that he loved me while I was growing up, was standing on the other side of the tunnel. And I was so confused because I felt so much love that was coming from him. And I felt, you know, so much love that was coming from Jesus also. And then through the tunnel, I could see there was a shadowy being that was coming down the tunnel and then would ask my father is she coming? And then my father would look at Jesus, and then Jesus would say, and we're, you know, just a minute, just a minute. And then this was all telepathically experienced. And then my father would tell the shadowy being, and he would go back down the tunnel, and he would tell these entities, these beings that were at the end of the tunnel, you know, that I wasn't coming. And this went on a few times back and forth as I'm watching my life review, as I'm experiencing this white light that's right next to me, as I'm experiencing, you know, Jesus's love, my father's love. And then I'm also too experiencing through my life review the pain that people might have felt from things that I did to them that was unethical or not kind. And I was feeling how it made them feel. And then I was also too had this vision or this, I was able to see things that were happening in the world. So there were, this was all happening at the same time. So there was like animals that were running, like African animals that were running from fire. And then there was a scene of like children and women that were dying because they didn't have clean, safe water to drink or to cleanse. And then after, at the end of my life review, I was told, or there was a voice where I had been born. It was before I was born. And then there was a voice that had said it was my time to come, to go. And I remember I didn't want to go. I remember going, I don't want to go. And this, entity said, but you have to go. You chose these parents for the lessons that you want to learn, resilience and perseverance. And then the next thing I knew, I was thrown back into my body with the light, the white light telepathically telling me, as I was going at warp speed back into my body, go back and tell everybody what you've experienced. I am that I am. And then the next thing I knew, I was in the water. And then I popped up and a young man that I heard, that I saw in my near-death experience say, there's a woman drowning, was precariously hanging kind of on the side of this rock, risking his life to save me, and said, give me your hand. And so I gave him my hand, and then he passed me down in a chain. There were about four or five people that had gathered and made a chain to go out into the water to save me. And then they carried me up to the beach, and by this time I'm bleeding, and I'm a bit of a mess. And somebody had called my boyfriend out of the water because he had been surfing. And so he came rushing in, and I was lying on the sand, and I started kind of babbling and telling him what I had experienced. And he said, don't ever tell anybody that, because they'll think you're crazy and they'll lock you up in an institution. And then I went unconscious, and then I was rushed to the hospital. So every day that was, you know, I couldn't stop thinking about it. It was very, very real to me. It's still real. And a lot of people that have near-death experiences will say that it's more real than, you know, the reality that we experience here on Earth. But over the years, so probably 5 years ago, through a DNA test, I actually found out, I found out who the shadowy being was, who's a relative of mine, that I didn't know at the time, and that my mother had kept secret and didn't want to, you know, say anything to me about it. But when I had found that out, that this person, I was related to them, and it was nothing to be ashamed about, it made me realize that my intuition, all those years that I had felt like I intuitively knew that there was something different in my family, but I was kind of always squashed and said, you know, it's none of your business. You don't need to know that, and kind of made to feel shameful, which is one of the reasons probably why I said when I was hanging on the rock there for dear life, please don't take me. I'm not worthy. Because I had always felt that I was not worthy from my parents and had felt that, you know, that I wasn't loved. But after I had that near-death experience and I experienced that I had chosen my parents for my experience on this earth to learn my lesson, it really, you know, really awoken me and made me look at my relationship with my parents a lot differently and really kind of understand, because of the lack of tools that they had and because they themselves were both abused as children from their own parents, you know, they had a limited access on, you know, how to parent. My mother used to always say, be lucky you have a roof over your head and food in your stomach, you know. And definitely I was very grateful for the fact that they could do something like that. So, but I do, once I have three children and once I became a parent, I knew that I wanted to break that cycle. And so I did everything I could to educate myself, take, workshops, read every book there was on parenting, child development, to find out a different way of parenting.
I love hearing near-death experiences. And they're also unique and different, but they're also very similar. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I had so many thoughts going through my head as you're telling the whole story, you know, from the beginning when you're talking about surfing and you're giving details and stuff about surfing. And I mean, for me, that's like a different language, you know, talking about the size of waves and how fast they're coming in and stuff like that. But I completely understood as a metaphor with life, that there's times in life where we just feel like we're just getting beat up by waves, or, you know, there's times where we think, okay, I can jump into this certain thing, and then it's just all so much more overwhelming than what we were expecting, right? And the waves are bigger and coming harder than what we were thinking. And so I had those thoughts, and it was just such a beautiful way to reflect on life in a sense. But then you go into, you know, the coral and the rocks that you were trying to climb and just trying to get that next breath, right? Even though most of us listening, we've never drowned, maybe never even been surfing or anything, but we can relate to that as far as life goes and trying to come up for that next breath and just wondering, is this going to be the end, you know? And then you go into your experience. I always wonder if your body, you know, when people have these near-death experiences, if the physical body, if that person was actually deceased in that moment, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know all the scientific terms or anything, you know, but the teaching that happens during those experiences and during your experience is some of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, which is why I think I love listening to them so much, near-death experiences. And to be able to see your father in a way that Christ sees him almost. And I was curious, had your father passed at that time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was actually him, his spirit then.
Right.
And to be able to feel that love, I can't even imagine what that must have been like. You know, 'cause nobody's perfect. We're not perfect
right.
on this life as yeah. human beings. And, I'm not a perfect father. I try, you know, and
he is.
Well, that's the important part, that you're trying and striving, and that's our human part. We're human. We're going to yell, we're going to scream, you know, we're going to get angry and we're going to get upset. But then we can also tell the child that apologize and, you know, I made a mistake. Those are things that children learn from, that it's okay to make mistakes.
I think it's so important to be able to look at other people with a little bit of grace. And I mean, we are promised grace, right, from God. And I don't think any of us really completely understand the depth of that and what that means. But we know that we're given grace, right? But then a lot of times as humans, we don't give that same grace to other people and try to understand where they're coming from. And for you to be able to see a glimpse of that with your father is, I can only imagine the peace that it has given you throughout the rest of your life. And that doesn't mean that it made things different or easier for you as a child. You know, that was still all really difficult. But one of my most favorite principles that you spoke about is, and Michaela and I fully believe this, and
I was just going to talk about this.
Well, I'll let Michaela talk about it, because this is one of your favorite things.
It's so funny that I know you so well, but let me know if this is not what you're going to say, because I love your thoughts. But you have given us so much validation, because for so long in our infertility journey, I actually had a lady that told me that she felt through trials, like when we don't understand our trials, because Brett and I have gone through at now 15 years of infertility, our kids are adopted, and for me as a woman, I have always felt like, why can I not bear children, right? That is my trial. And a lady told me one time that she likes to believe that we all chose our trial. And just like you are saying that we chose our parents, right? We might not understand why we have to go through that, but when we can have that validation that you had of this is what we chose, we can look into the lens from Jesus's lens, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I just think I got chills because of what you said. Because for so long I have had those feelings, and I thought that that was so unique for her to say. And I liked hanging on to that of like, well, maybe we did choose this trial. Maybe because we hear so many times our friends saying, I could never deal with that. I could never go through that. But when we look at it through that lens of like, well, we chose our hard, not saying that Heavenly Father wants us to have this hard, but I don't know. I'm probably not making sense, but I know that's probably what Brent was thinking too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And no, you make sense. Along with that, you know, you were taught that you chose your parents, and we like to believe that, yes, we chose a lot of the things that we have in this life. But I also struggled with that for a while in our infertility. It was like, well, if that's the case, why hasn't anybody chosen us?
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled.
Yeah,
that's with that for a long time.
I bet you did. That's hard.
But then to get my kids you know, and I feel like they've always been my kids. I've always been their dad. You know, I truly feel like they chose us to be their parents. And that can be hard too, because in order for them to come to us, right, somebody else gave birth to them and couldn't have them. And so that's another dynamic that's in the whole thing. But
for me, that was my experience that I had experienced, and I believe deeply for me that I did choose my parents. Now, some people, when they share their near-death experience, they talk about contracts, that there are people that have contracts. Well, I'm going to come back as the child this time. Last time, you know, you were the mother or the father, and you're going to be my boyfriend, or, you know, because we have these lessons, and they talk about agreeing to certain contracts and before they're actually, you know, come down and are incarnated into this life. But I mean, with my three children, I constantly thank them for choosing me to be their mother, and that I'm so honored, and it's such a privilege, and that I, you know, I hope that they think that I've, you know, done my best. I know that, you know, I'm human, I've made mistakes, and I mean, I have two grandchildren, and you'll experience this too when your children are grown up. I know it seems so far away. I have a grandson that's six, not just a year older than your daughter. And then I have a granddaughter who's a year and a half. And my son, you know, and just watching your children be parents, I'm always just so in awe that, oh my gosh, you know, I raised this person and he's raising these two other people that are helping with the evolution of humanity, that I raised compassionate and loving, respectful humans, and they're raising compassionate, loving, and respectful humans. And I don't think it gets any better than that, if that's what you can pass on in your parenting.
And along with that, I've thought about this too, with your kids. You know, you have said that You tried your best, right, as a mother, and you broke the cycle, right? But you still want, and you would, I'm sure you would tell your kids, I want you to be better than I was, mm-hmm. right? I want you to do better than I did, even though you did your best, right? You expect and want them to do and to be better. Right. And that's, you know, as a society, as humankind, right? I think that's constantly the cycle that we need to shoot for. And I think we fail sometimes.
It's questionable sometimes, right?
Right.
I think also, too, that we're becoming more awake as human beings. I mean, and of course, the world is just going, you know, with AI and technology. I mean, look at the way that we're communicating and relating these days. That and not to say that it's a bad thing, although, you know, like chocolate is wonderful to have, but it can be a bad thing after a while if you have too much of it, right? But I mean, like with my daughter who's 30, and she's so powerful. I mean, I remember at 30, I was, even after my near-death experience, I mean, I grew up very insecure because my parents, although they did the best they could with the tools that they had, which was very, very limited, and it was the fact that if they could put a roof over our heads and put food in our stomach, that was huge. I mean, I remember standing in lines with my mother to get, you know, powdered milk, Velveeta cheese, and sugar, you know, staples to be able to make things because we just didn't have money to be able to buy that. Because she had so many mouths to feed and stuff. But being able to have conversations in a respectful way, you know, that a child should not be put in the corner and made to shut up because they're not an adult. I mean, that whole parenting is a different time, but that's what they knew. So I truly believe that they did do the best they could, and they did do the best they could as far as loving me, because the love that they got was very limited. So how are, you know, what you learn is what you're also going to give to your child. And then if you're conscious, and I think that that's where my near-death experience kind of awoken me to the fact that there's something more here, and I can try to find out what it is. If I hadn't have been awake to that, and I don't think we have to have a near-death experience to become awake to that. I think that we can become awake to that if we practice by going inside and just really kind of listening to the divine voice that's coming into us to help guide us. And also too, by just acknowledging that there's a lot of information out there that we can, you know, you can research and you can get information and you can educate yourself on how to be the best and whatever it is that you want to be, you know, whether it's parenting, whether it's surfing, whether, you know, it's being a cook, you know, and it just takes practice. And practice, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to fall down, you're going to get dirty, and it's, you know, you're just going to have to keep picking yourself up and, you know, moving forward. It's kind of like Martin Luther King. For every 10 steps that he took forward, he took 9 steps backwards. So you make a little bit of a headway. And that's enough. That's great. At least, you know, you're moving forward and you're doing the best you can and you are striving. And our children, I think, see that too. And our grandchildren see that. I mean, I worked with the United Farm Workers, Cesar Chavez, and I had asked him why he kept fasting in order to bring attention to the farm workers, and that they were working in very dangerous situations where they were getting malathion sprayed on them and all the time, and it was causing deformities in the children, and women were losing their babies. But he would actually fast to bring attention and try to boycott grapes, because that was grapes have a lot of malathion in it. And I said, why do you do this when you know you're going to die? And he said, everything I do for my grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren. So he was thinking so far in the future on wanting to do the best that he possibly could. I mean, that was how I started looking at life, that everything I do, I'm doing for my grandchildren's grandchildren.
Yeah, I think about that a lot too, where I think about my life and certain things that I have or whatever because of certain things that ancestors had done. Right. And do they know, or I think at the time, like, they had no idea at the time when they were making those decisions, the impact that would have on my life generations later. Right. And I'm so thankful for that. Like Martin Luther, you spoke about him a little bit at the time. I mean, I'm sure that he knew he was making an impact, but did he know how big that impact was or was going to be, right? And I talk about that a lot too, just how our decisions affect so much more than just me, right? They're my decisions, but almost every decision I make affects my wife and my kids, you know, and then, like you're saying, possibly generations to come. And what, like, a beautiful principle.
It's like throwing a stone in the pond, and that effect, it creates all these ripples. Mm-hmm. So it creates this ripple effect. And oftentimes we don't know who it's going to affect, but what happens on one side of the world is going to have a ripple effect over here. And we definitely see that. and our thinking and our inner and outer environment. And, you know, it's so important for as parents and grandparents and teachers, you know, to be able to have hope for the children that we are guiding in this life.
Absolutely. And that's another reason why we do this podcast in the way that we do. And we talk about difficulties and hardships that people have gone through and how they've been able to work through those hardships. Obviously angels, you know, mm-hmm. You know, however you want to interpret that.
Right.
And I just want people to learn and to understand that everybody's struggling and there's ways to pick ourselves up, or that there's other hands that are helping to pick us up also,
mm-hmm.
and pull us out of the water.
Right.
Which is a good segue to our question.
Yep. Go ahead.
So we like to ask, what kind of advice would you give to any of our listeners? Maybe they've gone through something like you have, or even us talking about our children and how we can raise them. Any advice that you have for our listeners?
Never give up. You know, never give up. Whatever your purpose is, whatever you believe in, always remember that there's hope. That if you think of us as waves in an ocean, and the ocean is the divine, we're all just part of the ocean that is the divine. And if we allow the divine to be able to come into us, and, you know, whether it's either in prayer, whether it's in meditation, whether it's in chanting, whether it's in dance, whether it's taking a walk in nature and just listening to the trees, it's being awake and knowing that no matter how far you go down, you always can pick yourself up. And life is not easy. I think that is where a lot of people feel that somehow life is supposed to be easy. Life's not easy. It's hard. You're going to have moments of joy, and you're going to have moments where it feels like, oh, I can catch my breath. I feel like I'm having an easy day today. But the majority of the time, it's hard. We have to work hard to remember that we're here to work. We're here to work hard. We're here to awake. We're here to remember that we are spiritual beings and that we are from a bigger consciousness than just our little consciousness that we think is in the head, that actually is out in part of something much bigger than us, that you can call the divine, you can call God, you can call Christ, you can call, you know, whatever is comfortable, nature. But I think that if we remember that we're just a small little piece of something much, much, much bigger, and that if we can just be open to listen quietly to what that much bigger energy has to share with us, I think that will help us be able to pick ourselves up and keep going. And to love and be kind to each other and respectful and compassionate.
Remember, I love that word. That's
no.
We can't forget
no.
who we are, where we're from. Yeah.
We're all part of the ocean. We're all waves in the ocean.
Yep. I love that. Lynn, our final question is we ask our guests to share a truth. What's one thing that you know to be true?
Well, probably what I just said, that we're all waves in the ocean. And we're all one. We're all connected. There's an interconnectedness that, you know, my, and our backyard has gotten bigger because now we have social media, we have TV, where we know what is happening all around the world. So, you know, we have neighbors that we also are aware of and a part of, but that we're all one. What happens on one side or wherever, it has a ripple effect. It's going to affect us either emotionally, or it's going to affect our outer environment. It's going to affect our relationships, but that we're one and we come from one source.
Amen. Love it. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us, for sharing your story with us. Really quick, can you share with everybody, you have a book?
I do. I have a book called Entangled. And that's about, and I call it Entangled because we're all connected and we're one, part of a big old spider web here. And it's being published by Steiner Books, and hopefully it will be coming out soon. And it's about my my near-death experience. It's a memoir. It's about my childhood and my near-death experience, my transformation from that, and my DNA.
Awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah, looking forward to that coming out.
Okay. So we
can and take a look at it.
Anybody wants to follow me to find out when it comes out, they can follow me at Lynn Arches Rappaport on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. They can also to pre-order the book at Lynn Arches author@gmail.com.
Awesome.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put all that in the show notes also.
Great. Thank you so much.
Again, thank you. Thank you. Thanks. You're awesome. What an incredible story and experience.
Yeah, thank you for letting me share it with you, and blessings. It was so wonderful to meet you.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.